Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, folks. Glad you could join us for the Big Red Bench. Rory here with you until 7 p.m. talking all things sport. And coming up on the show tonight, actual live local sports reports on Cork City playing St. Pat's in a pre-season friendly. We're going to hear from boss Colin Healy after the Dubs won by 2-1. And we are going to talk to Colm O'Sullivan, who was at that game for us as well. Also coming up on the show, going to wrap up all today's Premier League action, including West Ham's impressive win over Tottenham this afternoon. We are going to talk to Saoirse Noonan about signing for Shelburne from Cork City, her international aspirations, and taking a step back from the Cork footballers. And we're going to talk rugby and the Six Nations with Emer Constein. That's all coming your way between now and 7 o'clock right here on the Big Red Bench. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us a text, 086-8104-106, or you can send a WhatsApp on that number as well, or send us a message on Twitter at Big Red Bench is where you'll find us. All right, in the Premier League, and Man City currently in action away to Arsenal in the third game of four today, and it is currently still a goal to nil in favour of Man City. Raheem Sterling scoring inside 2 minutes. City have been comfortable since then. Arsenal haven't really threatened too much. But 74 minutes on the clock there. Manchester City leading Arsenal by a goal to nil at the Emirates. And if that result stands, they'll go 10 points clear of Leicester City, who picked up an impressive win over Aston Villa today. At Villa Park was Tom Gell.
Aston Villa 1, Leicester 2. The visitors closed the gap on leaders Manchester City to 7 points. First half goals from James Maddison, a sweet strike from 20 yards. And Ashley Barnes, quickest to react after the keeper spilled Jamie Vardy shot, and it could have been more in that opening 45. Villa responded, they got one back early after the break, but they were never really at it. Brendan Rodgers' side much the better throughout the 90 minutes. The only disappointment for them, James Maddison injured himself taking off a corner. He was forced off as a sub while the England manager Gareth Southgate was watching. But at full time, Aston Villa 1, Leicester 2.
Yeah, good win for Leicester, who are certainly motoring along very, very nicely indeed. Thanks to those goals, and James Maddison and Harvey Barnes, they're picking up all 3 points. And manager Brendan Rodgers said he's delighted with the win and their performance.
We know what a good side Aston Villa are. To come and play for the majority of the game the way we wanted to, and then defend like we had to at times, I was so pleased and very proud of the team.
West Ham meanwhile are up to fourth with a 2-1 win over Tottenham today at lunchtime, and that was a good win for West Ham and a good performance as well. Guy Swindles.
West Ham 2, Spurs 1. Goals at the beginning of the first half through Antonio and the second through Lingard, just giving West Ham enough of a buffer against a Spurs team that really turned it on in the second half. They got one back through Lucas Moura as Gareth Bale took command, but when Son's shot in time added on agonisingly hit the inside of the post and was kept out, Spurs knew it wasn't their day. It's West Ham's. West Ham 2, Spurs 1.
Yeah, good game that one this afternoon. So that is West Ham to fourth in the Premier League into the Champions League qualification places. Devin Moyes doing a cracking job with the Irons, and he says his side can get even better.
I just think that our things like our possession, our retention of the ball, we feel as if we need to be better. But I keep saying, you know, I think we're only growing, and I'm trying to get good foundations down that we can try and improve. And that's why I'm trying to say, well, let's not get carried away totally. We've still got a lot of things to do.
As for Spurs, though, they are now 9 points adrift of the top four following today's defeat. Jose Mourinho says they only have themselves to blame.
I feel that the result should be a different one from what we played, especially in the second half. That's my feeling. We start the game with a defensive mistake, and we start the second half with another one. And when you are punished by these goals, then it's difficult.
All right, the last game of the day is at Old Trafford. Manchester United taking on Newcastle. Peter Smith.
Manchester United might be 12 points better off than this time last season, but too many drawn games have hindered their pursuit of leaders City. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has an eye on the Manchester derby in a fortnight's time, but surely there's no margin for error if United are serious about overhauling their neighbours. Newcastle's points buffer above the relegation zone has been eroded to 3. Steve Bruce has only ever taken a solitary point in 33 as a visiting manager at Old Trafford, where it's Manchester United against Newcastle.
So as Peter said there, it looks likely that Manchester United are going to be 13 points behind City by the time Old Trafford kick-off at Old Trafford happens at 7pm. But boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer isn't giving up on the Premier League title race, and he says they'll continue to do all they can to close the gap.
I don't think anyone would say that they're not going to go for it. We're going to go for a win every single game we play. Of course we are. But whatever other teams do, City, Liverpool, Leicester, Chelsea, Tottenham, whoever, West Brom, we can't control.
That kicks off at 7 o'clock tonight. Man City still up a goal up on Arsenal. 30 minutes left on the clock there in that game. Meanwhile, the champions, Liverpool, suffering their fourth straight Premier League defeat yesterday as their title defence continues to falter as they were beaten by Everton for the first time in over a decade, going down 2-0 at Anfield. But boss Jurgen Klopp says his team are going to keep fighting.
The only way I know is to try it again and again and again. The boys are still full of desire. I see that. But to change a football game and a result, and to get a result, you have to be decisive in the right moments.
Yeah, Liverpool certainly going through a very, very tricky spell indeed. Didn't look all that great yesterday against Everton, but as you heard, Jurgen Klopp there says he's confident they can get back to winning ways and his team will keep fighting, but not what Liverpool fans would have expected from their Premier League title defence. Elsewhere today in Scotland, and Rangers beat Dundee 4-1 at Ibrox today, so that means that Stephen Gerrard's side are 18 points clear at the top of the table. They need just 10 more points to become champions. Celtic playing Ross County though today at 7:30, and the defending champions suffering a poor start to the season, falling way behind leaders Rangers, but they're looking to get back to, I suppose, extend their winning run to 6 games tonight. And boss Neil Lennon says he's looking forward, not back.
Can't dwell on the past. You can analyse it at the end of the season or over the piece, but you know, we're just concentrating on the present really, and getting a groove on.
7:30 the kickoff time for that one. As I mentioned, Cork City in friendly action today as they lost out to St Patrick's Athletic in a pre-season friendly in Blarney, and finished by 2-1 in that pre-season game earlier on today, and Ron Hurley scoring the goal for Cork City. So we'll talk to Colin about that in just a little bit. In rugby, 5 of the French team which started in their win against Ireland in the Six Nations will miss next weekend's game with Scotland. Star scrum half Antoine Dupont is among those who have tested positive for coronavirus. On Thursday, France's health minister upped the isolation period for those with COVID-19 to 10 days. In snooker, Northern Ireland's Jordan Brown leads Ronnie O'Sullivan 5-3 in the final of the Welsh Open. It's the Antrim native's first ever major final. It's a best of 17 contest in Newport. In golf, the American Sam Burns has a 2-shot lead over the chasing pack as he prepares for his final round of the Genesis Invitational. Completion of the third round was delayed due to darkness and high winds. He'll tee off his final round just after 6:30 Irish time on 9 under par. And in racing, the Noel Mead trained Beacon Edge won the feature race of the day at Navan today, the Ladbrokes Ireland Boyne Hurdle. Sean Flanagan got the 7-year-old to victory ahead of the Gordon Elliott trained Fury Road, with a stablemate Tiger Roll coming home last of the 6 that finished. Right, we are going to kick off the show with football and Cork City's 2-1 defeat to St Pat's today in that pre-season friendly. Cork City's first pre-season game today, as all eyes are on the 26th of March in the first game in the first division for Cork City. They take on Cove Ramblers in what should be a cracking local derby at Turner's Cross. Going to hear from Colm O'Sullivan in just a little bit, who is at Blarney for us today. But first, Colm got the thoughts of City boss Colin Healy.
So with Cork City manager Colin Healy. Colin, a good run out for the lads today?
Oh, listen, it was, yeah. It played a good side in Pats, and it was. It's good to get 19 minutes into the boys after a long time off. So it's good to see the boys back out there.
It's been a longer than usual off season, as you say. So I mean, you've been training away, but to finally get on the pitch and just get a full 90 minutes must be good for the lads, just to kind of get competitive football even in a friendly game.
Yeah, no, I do. And listen, you're playing against a very, very good team. No, the boys enjoyed it, and they showed glimpses. It was. No, we got beaten. There was some good performances there.
Beaten 2-1, but as you say, good performances. And Pats are an experienced side. A lot of good players in that team today, the likes of Robbie Benson and John Mountney and Ronan Coughlin with the goal and so on. So it's a strong side.
You know, it's a strong side, and it's a good game for us. It's a good game for us, you know. So it's and we knew that they'd have a lot of possession of the ball, but it was, and even for the new lads that we have in, is just show the quality that they the likes of these Pats and the Premier teams have. So no, it was a good game for us, and we got a lot of positives out of it.
You got to use a lot of players. You made about six changes in the second half there. You got two different goalkeepers on, so you got to kind of try a lot of guys out, and that's probably what you need to do over the next couple of weeks now.
That's pre-season, and that's what we need. The lads need minutes, and so it's, listen, we've another three games, and so it's we need to get the minutes into the players. I said you can train all you want, but they need to get games as well.
What was pre-season been so far? You brought a few new lads in, the likes of Jamie Wynn was playing today, obviously Stephen Beattie is back, he wasn't playing.
Yeah, no, listen, Beattie's not ready yet, so he's training away. He'll be fine. As I said, Jamie came in, and we got George, there was a lot of lads in there today, you know, that's probably their first time in playing with us, so, and they've done well, so it's it was a positive.
Are you happy overall with how the squad is coming together now ahead of the new season?
Yeah, no, listen, as you can see there is we made a lot of changes, and there's some good quality there, so it's been good game, enjoyed it, although we didn't have enough of the ball, but that's Pats are a strong team, like, but it was a good game for us.
It's the first of four preseason games. It's four Premier Division teams you're playing now in the preseason games, so that'll be a good challenge for you ahead of the first division starting in a month's time.
Listen, you want to play some good teams, you know, so and you can see there today, you know, so, and it's a big game now. It's not a big game, but it'll be a tough game against Rovers next week.
And obviously you're all looking forward to the big game, start of the season, Cove Ramblers, the home game. Just a pity there won't be a crowd there for it, but it's a nice derby to start off with, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's a shame, like, but sure, listen, it is what it is. It'll be a big game, so one that we're all looking forward to.
Thanks, Colin.
Okay, that was Colin Healy speaking to Colm after today's defeat to St. Pat's. 2-1 was how it finished in Blarney. Colm joins me on the line now. First off, Colm, how good was it having live sport to report on?
I'll tell you what, I was actually looking forward to this during the week because we can go so little places and do so many little things in life in general, and we're used to just watching sport on TV. I hadn't been at a sporting event since October or November. The last one was probably whenever Cork City's last game of the season was, because there's been nothing since. There's been no League of Ireland, there's been no GA, there's been no rugby, so it was great to be out on a sunny day at a match and be out with see the lads running around and actually just having a live sporting fixture to go to. It's the little things in life, Roar, but it was great. And it was a good run out for Cork City today, as you heard Colin Healy mention there. They started slowly in the first half, really. I mean, St. Pat's got an early goal after 4 minutes through Ronan Coughlin, who was with Cork City about two or three seasons ago, and a player who's really come on since then, and he's done very well with Sligo Rovers, and he's signed for St. Pat's now, and he's off to a good start with Pat's getting one today. He got a second goal in the first half too that was disallowed for offside, and he looked very lively throughout. Cork City took a while to get to grips with St. Pat's. Cork City had a few new players in the starting lineup. Paul Hunt, a new signing in goal, was playing for City. It remains to be seen whether he'll be number one. Who'll be number one? It could be him. It could be David Harrington, son of Phil Harrington, who came on for the second half, or it could be Mark McNulty, who was there today as well in a coaching capacity. So I'd imagine Colin Healy is still kind of undecided about who will start in goal for them. Paul Hunt did okay in the first half. He made one bit of a clanger, all right, when he could have got sent off. He came way out of the box and did a bit of a dodgy foul, shall we say. Clattered your man from Pats and only got a yellow card for it. So he might have been lucky there. But overall, he did okay other than that. Likewise with David Harrington in Cork City's goal in the second half. Again, it was a mistake from him, really led to St. Pat's second goal, the penalty in the second half. He kind of fumbled the ball when it would have been easier to catch or punch it, and it resulted in Pats getting a shot, and there was a handball and a penalty given. That put Pats 2-0 up in the second half. Then in the second half, really for the last 30-35 minutes, Cork City really got into it and really upped their game. Colin Healy had made five or six changes at that stage, introduced a lot of players. The likes of Corey Galvin came on, Kean Murphy, Dale Holland, and it really kind of stepped things up for Cork City. And Ronan Hurley got a lovely goal to pull one back for City with about 20 minutes to go. They couldn't get an equaliser, but overall I think a good positive performance from Cork City. And I think Colin Healy will learn a lot from it, because it was a very strong St. Pat's side out today. I mean, Stephen O'Donnell is managing them now, and he's signed guys like John Moutney from Dundalk, Robbie Benson from Dundalk, who all have big European experience and league winning experience, and Ronan Coughlin from Sligo, a good goal scorer as well. Chris Forrester was playing. It was a very experienced Pat's side, so I think Colin Healy, as you heard there, was happy enough with how City played.
George Heaven arrived a couple of weeks back. A lot of talk about him. He'd been with Leicester City, a big centre half. How did he look today?
He looked all right. In fairness, I was quite impressed with him, actually. He reminds me a bit of a Dan Murray type player. Dan Murray was there himself today watching, actually, as well, the former Cork City captain. And George Heaven was, it was a partnership of Heaven and Slevin. George Heaven and Rob Slevin in the centre-half pairing today. And I think he did pretty well, Roar. He looks very confident on the ball, and he looks like he's a kind of a towering centre-half who can win a header in difficult situations and so on as well. So he did okay when he was called upon today, I thought. Jamie Wynn, who's a new signing as well, he actually signed from Dundalk, a young striker. He played the first half today. He was taken off at half-time. But again, he didn't get a whole lot of chances because City weren't really creating many chances in the first half, and St. Pat's really dominated the first half of the game today. But Jamie Wynn, I thought, looked lively up front as well. And I think himself and George Heaven are two good kind of astute signings that Colin Healy has made, along with some other players he's added to the squad as well. Stephen Beattie, obviously, who was on the show last week, is a big, big signing returning to Cork City. He won leagues and cups with City and so on a couple of years ago. I was chatting to Beats afterwards, and he just wasn't ready today really to play. He's not injured or anything. It's just a fitness thing. He was in Blarney. He was doing some running before the game and so on, and Colin just didn't want to play him on the AstroTurf pitch today, just didn't think he was ready for it. But he will be fit, and he will feature in some of the preseason games over the next couple of weeks as well. City have three more preseason games to come over the next 4 weeks, so they're away in Tallaght next week against Shamrock Rovers next Sunday, which will be a big test for them as well.
Obviously very hard to read too much into just one preseason game, the first preseason game back, but signs of confidence, I suppose, going into the new season.
Do you know what? There was really, because, I mean, it's something that's been lacking from Cork City a lot over the last, I suppose, 2 years at this stage, really. If you look at their last couple of seasons, City didn't look overly confident in any game they were playing. And I think Colin Healy, we kind of saw it at the end of last season, he kind of got kind of a fight and a kind of bit of attitude in the team. And I think we could see that again today. I mean, the players looked that little bit more confident. They looked to have a bit of self-belief. And I think that's something that Colin Healy and John Collar there with him as well definitely instill as a coaching team. Both very successful, as obviously Colin Healy's a player and John Collar is as a coach and a player and so on as well. And I think they instilled that belief in the players that they can go out and that they're playing for a big club. They're playing for Cork City and they have to go out and they have to give it their all. And they were doing that today. As you say, it's only a friendly match. I mean, it's only the first preseason game, so you can't really judge much of it. I mean, the next few games could go anyway. But I mean, it's a good grounding ahead of the First Division to play four Premier Division sides. Now, over the next couple of weeks, they have Pats today, Shamrock Rovers, Waterford, Finn Harps. So that'll give them a nice level to judge themselves against ahead of the big opening First Division game in about a month's time on the 26th of March against Cove Ramblers at Turner's Cross. And as we said with Colin Healy there, that's going to be great, I mean, to be at Turner's Cross for that. But it's going to be disappointing that the first local derby in the league between Cork City and Cove Ramblers, and I think about 11 or 12 years at least, Roar, I think it was 2008 or 2009 last time Cove were in the Premier Division and there was a local derby in the league. So it'll be disappointing that you won't have a full house and a full crowd there, but hopefully there'll be some kind of online streaming platform sorted that the fans can watch it as well.
Yeah, definitely, because City and Ramblers, Turner's Cross, first game of the season, the excitement of both teams who are going to be chasing promotion this year would have been absolutely electric. But as you say, fingers crossed they will get streaming sorted. Watch LOI seems to be very much up in the air at the moment, Colm, doesn't it? And I suppose it's going to be left to clubs, I'd imagine, to plug the gaps across the country.
Yeah. Even with Watch LOI last year, it was only done for the Premier Division. Yeah. So it's up in the air if they'll do it for the Premier Division again or not this year. I think RT are kind of saying they don't want to commit cost wise and so on to doing every single fixture, and they're willing to do about a third of the games, which probably won't be enough. So I'd imagine for the remaining Premier Division games and probably all of the First Division games, it will be left up to the clubs to film the games themselves and maybe do some commentary or so on, and maybe then charge. I suppose it could be a money maker for clubs as well. They could charge maybe a fee for fans to watch it, and it would go some way. It wouldn't obviously cover the loss, but it would go some way to covering the loss of not having gate receipts and crowds this season.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be a no-brainer for clubs to do the streaming, then charge money, and then cover the cost of the streaming. If you're not making money, other streams, fair enough, but as long as you're not losing money, I think clubs would be happy enough with that. Just on Colin Healy's squad, is there any talk of any more signings to come before the start of the season, or is Colin happy with the squad, or what do you think?
He did have a trialist came on today. I think it was a guy called Jack Walsh from Avondale. So he does have a couple of players on trial. So I think he's looking to add maybe one or two more players over the coming weeks. But he seems to be happy enough with the squad he has. It's a decent squad. You could see today there was a lot of players there. He made six changes. Like, and I mean, the players he brought off the bench are players who could start, the likes of Corey Galvin and so on, are players you would very much think would be in contention for a starting place in the first 11. So he does seem to have a bit of depth in the squad there. As we mentioned, Stephen Beattie wasn't even in the match day 16 today. So there are players
players to come in there, but I think he would like to add one or two more. It depends. Jamie Wynn could be the goal scoring striker that we've been looking for. Benon O'Brien Whitmarsh started up front as well today, looked lively, and Cian Murphy came on and looked lively as well up front, but that has been a problem position for Cork City in recent years, getting goals and so on. So hopefully one of those lads can step up, or maybe Colin might have someone else in mind that he's looking to sign as well, but I'd say he'll be looking to add maybe one or two more players over the next kind of 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, because Colin, this first division is going to be amazingly competitive and Cork City can't afford a slow start.
Hugely competitive. It's going to be the most competitive first division possibly ever, Rory. Yeah. I think, because you look at it there, you've Cork City, huge club, you have Galway who are investing money and who brought John Caulfield in as manager and have signed a load of players. They're going to be really, really right up there as well. Shelburne, another huge club, they've put a lot of money into, signed a lot of big players. So you're going to have Cork City, Shelburne and Galway as three huge forces, hopefully at the top of the first division. And that's before we even start talking about the likes of UCD and Bray, who are always strong first division clubs. Cove Ramblers have made a few signings. They could be up there. Athlone, even, who were down the bottom last year, have spent money and brought in players. So, I mean, there's a lot of teams there, Roar, and you could have it battling out by between five or six teams, I think.
Yeah, only 4 weeks to go to the start of the season. Certainly looking forward to that. It's been really nice having live sports report on the Big Red Bench today, live local sports anyway, because it hasn't happened since we've come back after Christmas. This is kind of a strange situation. It's fantastic.
It's great. It's fantastic. Long may it continue, and hopefully over the next couple of months now with League of Ireland football coming back, and we might have GAA coming back in towards the summer and things, hopefully there'll be a lot more local live sport, and hopefully it's only a matter of time as well before people can actually attend that. So we're kind of lucky in the media that we can attend these games, but I think there's a lot of people listening now who would love to be going to games, especially on a sunny Sunday afternoon like today when there's not much else to do with half the country closed down. I mean, sport is a great outlet for people, and it's outdoors, and we keep hearing about outdoors being very, very important in terms of COVID and so on. So hopefully we can gradually get fans back into all sports.
Yeah, certainly. So, all right, Colm, thanks for that, buddy, and I'll chat to you soon.
Thanks, Roar.
Yeah, great to talk to Colm, and great to talk about live sport here on Lee's side. It's been a while. It's been a while since we've had live sports report on locally, since before Christmas. Anyway, nothing's been happening after Christmas. Obviously, the GAA hasn't started back yet, and it's good to see Cork City back in action, and good to see them get a good run out today against a decent St. Pat's team, and acquit themselves quite well as well. As Colm has mentioned, it's going to be amazingly competitive in that first division, with so many good teams, a lot of money being spent and a lot of players being brought in to teams all around the country, and Ramblers have assembled a very good squad. Cork City have assembled a decent squad. Galway United, with John Coffey at the helm, of course, assembling a very, very good squad indeed, and you've got Shelburne there as well. It's just going to be brilliant crack, this first division. It's going to be intense, and there's going to be a lot of focus on it with Cork City down there this year. I'm really looking forward to the start of the season on the 26th at Turner's Cross. As we were saying with there, we're coming. Such a shame that it won't be a full Turner's Cross given the COVID situation in this country. A packed Turner's Cross for a local derby on the opening day of the season would be absolutely sensational. But it's not going to happen. Hopefully, we'll be getting crowds in towards the later part of the year. And hopefully, something can be sorted with streaming as well, because it would be a shame if that game wasn't streamed live. I imagine it is going to be streamed live somehow by one or both of the clubs. So it remains to be seen, but I'd imagine fans will be able to get to see it, because it's too big a game not for fans not to see it. But it's going to be a cracking first division campaign, and I cannot wait for Cork City, of course, playing Shamrock Rovers next week in that pre-season, in their second pre-season friendly. So we'll be talking about that on next week's show. And the Premier League, it's approaching full time at the Emirates, where Manchester City look like they're going to hang on to that 1-0 win. In fact, the final whistle has just gone. Arsenal 0, Manchester City 1 is how it's finished. Raheem Sterling with the goal after under 2 minutes. That's given City all 3 points. The season got 10 points clear of Leicester City, 13 points clear of Manchester United, who are in action this evening at Old Trafford. They take on at Newcastle United, and there for us is Peter Smith.
Well, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer makes two enforced changes from his last Premier League selection. Edison Cavani and Scott McTominay are both ruled out. In come Nemanja Matic and Daniel James. One alteration to the Newcastle side where Joe Linton is restored, with Dwight Gayle dropping down to the bench. At Old Trafford, it's Manchester United against Newcastle.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk to Ian McConstein about the Women's Six Nations. And next, we're going to talk to Saoirse Noonan about signing for Shelburne.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. The Big Red Bench.
Glad you could join us on the show on this Sunday evening. Rory here with you until 7 p.m. followed by Green on Red for all the best in Irish music from 7 till 10 with Conor Halpin. Manchester City's march towards the title, what looks like an unstoppable march towards the title, has continued with a 1-0 win away to Arsenal. Joe Rawson was at the Emirates.
Full time, Arsenal 0, Manchester City 1. Raheem Sterling's goal after just 2 minutes, enough for the Premier League leaders to record an 18th win in a row. In truth, the scoreline should have been greater. City dominated the game. Sterling could have had a hat-trick. De Bruyne, Mahrez and Jesus all could have scored as well. For Arsenal, well, Mikel Arteta will be pleased with the endeavour his team showed, but they really threatened Edison's goal. The City train towards the title rolls on. Can anyone stop them? The Gunners weren't able to. Arsenal 0, Manchester City 1.
10 points clear now of second place Leicester, 13 clear of Manchester United, who kick off against Newcastle in about a half an hour's time. Alright, we're going to stick with football, and Saoirse Noonan recently signed for Shelburne, leaving Cork City. I got a chance to speak to Saoirse about signing for Shell, to her international aspirations, leaving City and taking a step back from the Cork footballers. But this is my conversation with Saoirse Noonan.
Yeah, I suppose I spoke with George, my agent with Ten Management, back in November, and I think it's my ambition to play abroad and to, I suppose, get into Vera's team. So I've been working really hard, I feel, over the last 12 months mostly, in lockdown. And I just think when Noel signed up with Shells, he contacted me, and I suppose I did think about it a little, and I suppose looking at other options, and there was other options available to me, and it just seemed right now, with everything going on in the world, that this was just another journey for me to take and an opportunity that I have to take for myself.
How hard of a decision was it though to leave Cork City?
Yeah, of course, being a Cork person, it was a huge decision. Cork City's all I've known. I have friends, lifelong friends there. It was a tough decision, but to be fair to them, they all understood my goals and my dreams and my ambitions, and they all supported me, which made that decision a lot easier for me.
And you're saying when Noel King approached you, I mean, like, how did Noel King sell Shelburne to you, or did he have to sell it much to you?
Yeah, Noel kind of rang me and just kind of basically said what his plan was for the year ahead. He asked me my goals first, and he just said, look, he'd love to have me on board and have a think about it. He understood the move and how big of a deal it would be, and I think one thing I respected a lot was he didn't put any pressure. He just said, you go away, you think about it, and come back to us when you're ready, which I did do. So I went back and forth to him and Mark Levy from Shells, and to be fair to them, they've been very accommodating and understanding through the whole process. And I sat down with my family and I just said, look, what do you think? And I think they all just said, look, it's an opportunity, and why not go test it? We've nothing to lose, and I'm really looking forward to it now.
Did you have offers from elsewhere? I think you had offers from America, maybe England as well. So they all had to be weighed up against the move to Shelburne.
Yeah, for sure. I was looking at going to Iceland there only last week, so before Shelburne came on board. So I suppose all these things come into play. And I was hoping to go to England on trials and stuff. So these things are life, they're once in a life opportunities. And I think with COVID, all these things have kind of now be put on hold. And I just think with Shelburne, it was maybe the right time to come along. And I just felt like I had to do it, and I had to make that jump for myself.
And the season kicking off on March 26th, have you been up training with your new teammates yet, or how is it working?
Yeah, so I've been up twice now, and I've really enjoyed it so far. Sessions have been intense, and there's been a nice atmosphere. Everyone's buzzing to be back on the pitch, and so far so good anyway.
And I suppose, as you say, leaving Cork City was the hard decision, but also taking a step back from the ladies footballers as well this year must have been an incredibly hard decision to arrive at.
Yeah, definitely. I think I probably made my mind up that before I even made the move to Shells, that I had to put that just on hold for a couple of months or a season or whatever and really focus on soccer. So I had time to think about that myself and I suppose speak to Efi and then let the girls know as well. And again, it makes it a lot easier when you've really good support and you've girls that you feel comfortable with and you feel like you can talk to and tell them and ask for their opinions on things. Because it's not easy. It's not easy moving away from some players that you grew up with, you're comfortable with them, you're in your comfort zone, to go into a completely new team. It's challenging. So I suppose learning from them, speaking to them, they made it really easy and they just said, look, go after your dreams, chase them, and the door will always be open, which was nice to hear.
So I remember speaking to you last year, it seemed like you had two games almost every weekend coming up to the last couple of months of the year. You said last year you managed it okay, but it must have been exhausting at the same time.
Yeah, look, I think during it, I don't think I even felt too tired. I really felt like I was mentally ready for it. I was physically ready for it. And I think I showed that in a lot of games that it is possible to play both sports. It's a different situation if you want to go play in England and you can't really play for Cork ladies as well back home. So yeah, look, I do think it's possible. And I do think there are going to be girls that want to do both and can do both. So I would never say that it wasn't possible. And I do think if I was to keep on Cork City and Cork this year, I would have been able to do it again. So yeah, it was just a decision for myself for now that I knew I needed to make a break and try test myself in other areas of the field, and that's what I'm going to do.
Still must have been a very tough call to make to Efi Fitzgerald, I'd imagine, was it?
Yeah, it was more upsetting, I suppose, than anything. Efi brought me into the team, and I suppose I made my debut in CIT in the Munster final. So yeah, look, all these little things made it really emotional for me. I know my granddad definitely wants me to keep playing Gaelic football. Who doesn't really want to keep wearing the Cork jersey and keep playing? But right now I'm in the stage of my life that I really want to push on and start knocking on the door of the Irish team and try break into that. So that's my aim, and I kind of have to put other things on, I suppose, the back foot for now and really go after that.
So hopefully you'll be in Croke Park this year supporting the girls.
For sure, yeah.
And speaking of, like, coming back to Turner's Cross to play against Cork City is going to be a very strange feeling, I suppose, for you.
Yeah, I think when the news came out about the girls playing in Turner's Cross, I was, I suppose, over the moon in one way and nearly devastated in another way. Turner's Cross always have a huge place in my heart. Played there, I suppose, underage growing up in cup finals and stuff, and then captaining my country in Turner's Cross, scoring against England in Turner's Cross, all these little things, they stay with you forever, I suppose. And in a way, I kind of knew in my head it'll be Shelburne and Cork City and around the first few games of the season. And I kind of was hoping that I would get to play in Turner's Cross, that I would be there. But I was hoping it also wouldn't be the first game because I knew I'd be nervous enough starting with a new team. And I didn't really want to go out and play against the girls right away. But look, it's the second game and it's going to be a day of history, I suppose. And I feel absolutely privileged. I still get to go out and be involved in that day, even though I'll be wearing the Shelburne jersey. I'll still get to be on the pitch with my friends and we'll battle hard for 90 minutes. But once that whistle goes, like, it's everyone's pals. Like, you look through the Women's National League at the moment and every single team, everyone's pallies off the pitch. But once it hits the pitch, then it's all guns blazing.
So, I mean, like, what targets has Noel set for Shelburne this year?
I suppose their big target is the league. I think they've been there about the last couple of years, and I think they're nearly old one at this stage. There's a really good bunch of girls there. And look, Piemont are phenomenal, and there's huge talent and competitiveness within the Women's National League, but I do think Shells, that's the aim this year, to get a trophy and definitely bring the league back to shells.
And have you set any kind of personal targets, I suppose, for the year ahead?
Yeah, I suppose for the last number of months now, my main target's just been to try to get into that Irish team. I said it back in March last year. I wrote it down myself when we went into that lockdown that I was going to get on the Irish team. And I think I said I'd do it in 2 years or so, that I'll be there, thereabouts. And I think getting my name in the squad for the Germany game was a stepping stone for me. And it really has opened my eyes that I can do it. And I've been in contact with Vera, and she's told me little pointers on how to improve and how to get onto her team. So now I think it's just up to myself to go do it and improve myself. And that's all I can do, really.
Vera was quite complimentary of you towards the latter stages of last season, which must have been a massive boost.
Yeah, it was, of course. Everyone wants to be in the senior manager's eyes. There's a number of girls wanting to be in that panel, and there's a number of girls that could be in that panel. So I suppose just when you feel like you're getting recognised by her, it's another push towards your goal, and you know you're heading in the right direction. And I suppose as well in these tough times, like, everyone lacks a bit of motivation, and that definitely helps to push you along those roads and show you that your dream can come true if you keep working hard.
And you feel like getting onto that international team is within your grasp this year if you work hard enough?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm probably borderline there at the moment. As I said, it's just up to myself now. I have to keep ticking away, doing my own training at home, and then obviously improving with the football up in Shells. So I do think I'm thereabouts, but I have to prove it to be there. I can't just say it. Yeah, I definitely have to keep working hard now, and hopefully Vera will see that and call me in.
And you mentioned George O'Callaghan at the start of this as well. He's come on as your agent. How much of a help has George been? Because George has, I suppose, seen it all, done it all in Irish football and abroad as well.
Yeah, George's a character. He's been a huge help to me. I speak to him nearly every day at the moment. But yeah, look, everything. He just makes everything seem so much easier. Looks after literally everything. We only made a joke about it today. I was telling him if I nearly broke down on the way back from Dublin because I nearly ran out of petrol. And I said, geez, if I did, I would have been calling you before my dad, because he would have killed me. But no, George has been around the world playing football. He knows the ins and outs. He knows what it takes to be the best, and what work you have to do. So he's definitely been on my case, telling me to keep getting on the road and running and running and running. So that's definitely what I have to do for now.
Excellent. Saoirse, very best of luck with the move to Shelburne and with getting onto the Ireland team as well. And we'll see you turn us cross in a couple of weeks.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Rory.
Yeah, we certainly will see Saoirse Noonan in a couple of weeks. City's second game of the season, their first return as cross, is against Shelburne. That is on the 3rd of April, Saturday the 3rd of April. So that's going to be a cracking occasion as Saoirse Noonan returns to face her former side in just the second game of the season. So it should be an absolute cracking game. Look, best of luck to Saoirse with the move and getting onto the Irish national team. And of course, a big decision for her to have had to make in taking a step back from the ladies footballers this year. Of course, she was a dual star and has always been a dual star, and just was very, very busy, as I mentioned to her at the latter stage of the year last year with Cork City and their cup run, and the ladies footballers and their run as well. Was out twice every weekend, two different matches, two different codes, and she did it all fantastically well. Performances are always excellent, but as she said, wants to focus on football for now and see if she can get into Vera Powell's Irish national squad. So hopefully we'll be seeing Saoirse in an Ireland jersey very, very, very soon indeed. Alright, we're going to talk rugby now in Ireland. Munster and UL Bose back. Eimear Considine says she's delighted that the Women's Six Nations schedule has been confirmed. The former Clare footballer and Camogie player has won 15 caps for her country and says the squad are keen to get back to competitive action after a long absence. They open their campaign against Wales on April 10th. Considine joined Oisin Langan to discuss that match and their aims for the year ahead.
How important is it right now for children to keep working on the skills, stay active and do all that good stuff that they need to do?
I think it's so important. You know, kids are at home looking at screens all day long, you know, trying to do some online learning. They're lacking in, you know, meeting their friends every day at school. They're lacking in, you know, the Saturday morning mini rugby leagues they'd have, or even just getting out in the park and having a bit playing around with the ball. You know, that stuff isn't happening as often. So I think it's so important that this can be done from the safety of your own home in the back garden. There's very limited space needed, and you really don't even have to be a rugby player to do this. So if now is your time that you started to watch Six Nations and want to be the next Johnny Sexton, well, and you had no rugby experience, these skills are suited for those, with little to no skills, or the ones that are even more advanced.
And you actually can do an awful lot of work on your skills at home. And people maybe have realized that more in the last year. And you, as an elite athlete who had to work away at home on your skills, you know that more than anyone, don't you?
The skills of rugby don't change whether you're 6 or whether you're 26 or 36. You still need to be able to pass and catch. You still need to have, you still need to be able to have good footwork. You still need to be able to be fit. The skills don't change. And I think that's the beauty of it, is that the skills that, we're demonstrating for the online skills hub are the skills that I practice day in, day out at training or on my own. And that's the most important thing, is whether you're an elite athlete or whether you're just beginning rugby, the basics are the basics and they still need to be executed well.
What is it like at the moment? You're watching, obviously, that the men's Six Nations taking place. We got clarity, I think, last week that there will be a women's Six Nations. So it's maybe easier to watch what's going on when you know that your event is coming up.
Yeah, I think we would have been looking on with envy had we not, got something in the calendar, just looking at rugby. And it gets even more excited. Like, the buzz around the Six Nations is just, it's out of this world. So to be able to know that, yes, without crowds, but, to be able to represent your country, sing the national anthems, and put on the green jersey, it's a dream, whether there's 50,000 people or just 50,000 people watching you from home. So to finally have those dates in the diary was great. And, it makes us even more excited after watching the men's games. And we were training yesterday, and it makes your training, you have a pep in your step going training, knowing the dates are there. There's a bit more bite in training, knowing that, there's jerseys up for grabs and selection is up for grabs. So, oh, look, the next few weeks are going to be super exciting, and we really are delighted that the fixtures are finally locked in.
And how good is it to have something to focus on, to have a date in mind, as you say?
Oh, we're sick of running. The end date was never there as to when our pre-season was done, and we'd done pre-season 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, and, the Six Nations got cancelled there back at the start of the year. It was like, my God, we're back to square one again with our conditioning sessions, because, it's... You're peaking, you're trying to taper your load, you're trying to manage your load based on, what upcoming competitions we had, and we didn't. So it's just, everything has changed. Everyone's mindset has changed. You're training better, the trainings are more fun because you're focusing on, game stuff, pitch maps and different combinations, and actually putting stuff in place that you'll get to practice in a few weeks' time, as opposed to just, doing a tackling drill. And yeah, they're important, and like I said, the basics are important, but there's nothing better than playing the game.
There's always a lot of eyes on this team. There's always a lot, I suppose, of pressure when you're playing for Ireland, but this is a particularly big period of time coming up because you've got the Six Nations and World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, it's great. Obviously there's still uncertainty around when our qualifiers are, but at the end of the day, we have our eyes on New Zealand and getting on that plane to New Zealand in August. So it's a super exciting year for women's rugby that we do have World Cup qualifiers, then a Six Nations, and then potentially a World Cup at the end of the year. That's what you play for. It's like, yes, I was lucky enough to be in a World Cup in 2017 at home, but going to New Zealand, they're so passionate about their rugby. It's they live and breathe it. Whether you're a man or a woman, a World Cup in New Zealand is going to be an extraordinary event, and they will treat it the same as a men's World Cup. And, the crowds will be there. The standard of rugby on show will be phenomenal. The New Zealand team alone, they're the best, if they're not second best, I'm not sure, in the world at the moment, and there'll be a huge amount of eyes on the World Cup as a result of that.
Isn't it funny, normally when I'm talking to an athlete who's building up to a big tournament or trying to get to a big tournament and they say the crowd will be there, you nearly kind of throw it away as a, well, that's a given, but how... And Emer, this might seem like a silly question. How much of a motivation, or how much more motivation does it give you to go to the World Cup? Because as it stands in New Zealand, you would actually get to play in front of a crowd, which is something in this part of the world we hope will happen, but it's unlikely to be soon.
Yeah, and I think that, I think the stadiums will be full. I think they'll realise that, our families can't be there. Our friends can't be there. There'll be no supporters from our end getting into the country, and that the support has to come from them, and I think the stadiums will be full because they are one of the very few countries in the world that gets to have stadiums full and fans at stadiums. And that's an added bonus too, knowing that like you are going to be going over there playing in front of crowds. And obviously, yes, you'll be playing for your family and your friends at home and the other girls, and they'll be obviously broadcasted and on television. But it's a different story when you're there and there's a, you know, the days that we have happened to fill Energia Park, like it's, they're the days that you play for. They're the days that you, you know, you remember. And the, I think, was it 2020? I think it was, or 2019, where we set like a record attendance for a women's game in Ireland, or Irish women's rugby game. And like, you remember those days because, you know, they're memorable. And the crowds were so loud that day that your communication had to be extra. You're running out on the field and you're singing the national anthem and you're deafened by the noise. And that's what you do it for as well. You know, there's so much more. Yes, you play for your country, but you play for those fans. And you hear a lot of the men saying at the moment that, you know, this one is for the fans, and especially Scotland at the weekend. Like, it must have been so difficult not to have had fans there. It's moments like that that you're like, God, it's for the fans. And yes, to go back to your point, it's very exciting that we might hope for full stadiums over in New Zealand.
I imagine you just can't wait to get going, can't wait to get playing games again. And that opportunity is coming up quite soon.
Yeah, like I know personally, I haven't played since the English game in 2020 Six Nations. So it'll be a full year almost since I played a competitive game. Yes, we've done internal games and we've had quite a lot of contact blocks in training, but nothing really replicates the pressure situation of a game or playing against the best teams in the world.
Irish Rugby International, Emer Considine, thanks for joining us at the launch of the Aviva Mini Rugby Virtual Skills Hub. Remember, to find out more, you can go to www.aviva.ie/safe2dreamteam. Emer, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jesse.
Yeah, great to hear from Emer Considine there ahead of the start of the Six Nations, Ireland opening their campaign against Wales on April 10th. Now we're going to talk racing. The 2021 Cheltenham Festival has well and truly begun, the opening race of the festival just over 3 weeks away. Dennis Kerman and Dave Keena are looking ahead to one of the biggest events on the sporting calendar.
Hello and welcome to the Chanel Pharma Irish Road to Cheltenham. I'm Dennis Kerwin, and over the next 3 weeks we will take a look ahead to the Irish Challenge for some of the main prizes at the Cheltenham Festival. We will be joined every week by Patrick Mullins to run the rule over the principal championship races. But first, Dave Keena paid a visit to trainer Shark Hanlon and chatted about the real rags-to-riches story of Sky Ace, who has been a revelation since joining the County Carlow-based trainer for £600 and is now festival-bound.
Shark, Sky Ace, she's heading to Cheltenham now for the Mayor's Novice Hurdle. It's a bit of a dream.
It's a big dream, so it is, considering you buy one for £600 and end up in Cheltenham with her. It's something every trainer dreams of. And we're lucky we have good owners, the Dubai owners, one chap from Dublin there. They're very happy. The yard is at a high because of it. We hadn't a runner in Cheltenham for a couple of years now. Hidden Cyclone was the last one that we had. And we're going over there, with a little chance. And that meant a big thing, so it is. Like, if we could finish in the first three over there, we'd be very happy. But I think she has the ability to go in it if things go right.
And she's coming into the race in good form. Listed win and a graded win. Two surprise results to a lot of people outside, but not to you and those closest to her.
No, anyone that has anything to do with her for the last couple of months there, for the last 6 months, she's doing everything right the whole time. If I wasn't training her tomorrow morning, if Gordon or Willie or Henry was training her, she'd be half the price she is. The price won't make any difference, and I don't think the training makes any difference at this stage either. I think that we'll do as good a job as anyone.
It's just unfortunate how the lads involved in her, who are huge enthusiasts, they're all based out in Dubai, that they can't go. But from your own perspective here, your mum and dad, that live in the house for you, it must give everybody in the yard and the locality a real lift.
It's a real lift for us, so it is. My mother and father are inside, they can't go anywhere because they're over 80. It's a pity that we can't go, because if we could go, definitely my father and mother would be in Cheltenham this year, so they would. But listen, hopefully that everything is alright for next year. Maybe we'll do it something else next year.
You deliberately haven't run her in this bad ground over the winter. She's had her last run was in Punchestown. What kind of form has she been in since? You've always indicated that she's not the best of workers at home.
No, she's a bad work mare at home, so she's, but she's in great form now. We give her a break, she pop a lot of weight, and she's even working better now than she ever has before. But listen, she got her break, and she deserved it. She didn't. I didn't want pulling the tail end of her on bad ground, so that's the reason I didn't run her for the last couple of months. And she runs well fresh, so I think we'll go to Cheltenham with her fresh.
And the better ground over there, do you think that'll be a help to her?
It makes an awful difference to her. She has to have goodish ground. I ran her in Tipperary one day on bottomless ground, and she fell, as a matter of fact, at the second acid hurdle last, and she just couldn't handle that heavy, tacky ground. And the better the ground is, the better she'll be.
So on the lead up to Cheltenham now, we're very close to it, it's only just a few weeks away. Is it a bit of a nervy time for you? Because she, other yards, they might have a good few runners. She's the only shot that you have at the festival this year.
Listen, like, you take Garn and Willie there with 50 or 60 runners apiece. When you only have one, it's on your mind. Every morning you get up, you're thinking, is everything going to be all right? And but listen, you can't change routine. You have to go do the same as you did for the last 12 months with her. And hopefully everything stays sound. And for the lads in Dubai there, it'd be absolutely brilliant. And for Mick Delaney in Dublin, like, for her to go over there, run well, to buy a horse for £600 and have a runner in Cheltenham from it, it's a kind of a dream more than anything else.
And final word on the jockey, Jody McGarvey, presumably he's going to maintain the ride. He's a very good rider, doesn't get the opportunities possibly that his talent deserves, but it's a lovely opportunity for him to go over here and not be under any illusions that he won't be riding. He'll definitely ride her, I presume.
Oh, he definitely rides her. He's after giving her great rides the whole way along. As a matter of fact, she got bet twice with two different riders, and every day he gets up on her, she rides a race, runs a race for him. So he loves her. And it's gas. I don't let him ride her in bits of work around. Never did since we started, and we decided we weren't going to change that. Shane in the yard rides her in her bits of work, and he knows her well, and he's very happy with her. So Jody will meet her there on the day, and hopefully everything goes to plan.
And final question, I presume there's plenty of excitement and a great old buzz in the yard because of the fact that she's going over there a contender.
Of course there's a great buzz in the yard. Like, when you have a runner in one of them big meetings for a small yard, it makes an awful difference to those. And I think she'll have plenty of support from all the people around the country as well. Like, she's a little bit of a talking mare at the moment, and hopefully they can stay talking about her after Cheltenham.
Yes, it would be some story if Sky Ace could give Shark Hanlon and the Bird in the Hand Syndicate the ultimate day out at the biggest festival of them all. But now, in the Chanel Pharma Irish Road to Cheltenham, Patrick Mullins talks to Dave Keena about this year's Champion Hurdle.
So, Patrick, with the idea of looking ahead to the main races, I think the Champion Hurdle is a great way to start off the fixture. That is a particularly good record in the race, but to me it looks between the two mares this year, Honeysuckle and Epitant. Assuming Epitant comes back to her best, and I was hugely impressed by Honeysuckle at Leopardstown, the way she put the race to bed, and she got horses out of their comfort zone very, very quickly. She looks a much improved mare this year.
It's going to be a fascinating contest. Honeysuckle, last year it was the right decision not to go to Champion Hurdle. She wasn't quick enough, slick enough or sharp enough, whereas what she did in Leopardstown this year shows she's improved, she's come forward, and for me she's the one to beat off that. She's quite versatile tactically. Epitant, I wouldn't be too worried about her run in Kempton. I think they said she was in season, which would make sense. She'll obviously be stalking Honeysuckle. She probably has a few more gears than her. But Rachel Blackmore will be alive to that. She'll be going a good gallop. It is between the two mares, and I think that's fantastic. I think this mare's programme is really starting to come to fruit now. But I'll be riding Charge in the race, and we'll be lurking in the shadows. And maybe if the two mares end up... taking Marger on, we might be able to come and pick up the pieces.
And you've already won a grade one on him this season, and he seems to reserve his best form for better ground, and maybe he's more spring horse.
I think at Christmas in Leopardstown we're on the very inside track, which is a very dry course, and then in February we're out in the middle of the track where the ground has been watered for the flat racing, and it's quite holding. In Cheltenham last year he handled the soft ground when it was wet and loose, and I think he handles that wet loose soft ground all right, so I wouldn't be too worried about the ground in Cheltenham.
And when you're at the start in a championship race like that, what's the atmosphere like at the start? Is there much chit-chat the way there might be, or the perception is that, you know, when you're down at the start, you're beginning to organise yourselves that I'm going to make the running, or you have a rough idea. Is it a little bit more tense at the start of a championship race?
I suppose in a lot of them, there's a smaller field, which of course means everyone slots into their position quite easily. In a bigger field, there isn't much chat. No, it's quite. Everyone has their goggles down, their mouth guards in, and it is a bit tense. It's very professional. Hasn't been any fireworks down there when I've been there anyway.
And how important, from the yard's point of view, is to get off to a reasonably good start. I remember Ruby, when he won the Supreme and Champagne Fever, said it's just great to have a winner on the first day, but to ride the first winner, it's brilliant.
Well, to get a winner on the board early is so important. I mean, last year it was the last race on the second day, which of course doesn't sound very long, but by God was it a long, it was a long time waiting for it, because especially, like I said, we have a big team, we have lots of fancies, so we need to get one on early, and just one winner takes all the pressure off. One year we got no winner in the first 2 days, and then we had four on the third day: York Hill, Under So, Nicholas Canyon, and I think Let's Dance. And again, that was a long, it was a long wait.
Yeah, it's funny, in the space of 24 hours a lot can change. I remember Robbie McNamara, I think he tweeted, Willie's horses were out of form, or somebody suggested that they were out of form, and then they bounced back into form 2 days later. And it just goes to show how quickly the game can turn around.
That's it. You know, on that year, I remember we looked at all the results and nothing really ran below par. I mean, Mellon got beaten in the Supreme, but he got beaten by a very good horse, and you can run very well in Cheltenham and get beaten. You finish second, it's not a bad run. It's just so difficult to win over there.
So that's the first part of the Irish Road to Cheltenham, thanks to Chanel Pharma, Ireland's leading generic pharmaceutical company. We will look ahead to more Cheltenham contenders next week.
Yeah, thanks to Dave Keane and Dennis Carman there as they started on the road to Cheltenham, which is just a couple of weeks away. It's one of the biggest events in the Irish sporting calendar, as Dennis mentioned. So massive excitement here at home and further afield for that. So we'll keep up with that road to Cheltenham preview over the next couple of weeks. But that is it from us on the show this evening. Thank you very much indeed for tuning away on the Big Red Bench. We'll be back next Saturday and Sunday from 6. Valerie's in on Saturday, I'm in on Sunday. You can follow us on Twitter as well at Big Red Bench, and you can follow us on Instagram as well at Big Red Bench. Very imaginative with the old names on our social media handles. Right, but that's it from us. Conor Halpin's up next with Green on Red. 3 hours of the best Irish music coming your way for the next 3 hours right here on Cork Red FM. But enjoy the rest of your Sunday night, folks, and we'll speak to you next weekend.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.